Dublin, Ireland. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney hanging out with all of you on America Tonight. I am so excited to be immersed in Irish culture and history and everything else in between. I can't tell you how excited my family is, the Fitzgeralds and the Delaneys. They keep writing me notes to see what I'm doing and what's happening in Dublin and what it's been like so far. And I've only been here a couple of days. I feel fortunate that I'm going to be able to see even more things. I've done some of the traditional things like going to Guinness and touring that and Jameson, of course. Right away we get the liquor out of the way. Jameson, the whiskey, and beer with the Guinness. But the views from that bar are absolutely incredible. If you go to the top of Guinness and then seeing the Jenny Johnson, of course, the boat that took so many of the Irish back to the United States, and then going to Trinity College and seeing the Book of Kells. I have with me on the show Michael McDermott, and he's got a different kind of Ireland to show people. He's part of the Le Cool crew that started actually in a place where I used to live in Spain and Barcelona. And the idea is, you know, sometimes when people visit cities, actually I think this happens a lot, they want to see what's on the menu, the things that everybody talks about. It's like if you pick a city even in the United States, you pick Dallas, Texas, or New York, or Washington, D.C. But what about the other things that are happening? What about something tailored specific to what you like? And that's what Le Cool is all about. So, Michael, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey there. Good morning.
The idea behind the tours, did I get that right? Was it to give you a cool, hip, different kind of experience, or what is it?
Yeah, basically, I think the tours have grown out of the our e-zine, which is a culture guide to the city. But what we do on with Le Cool in general, the idea is as recommended by a friend. And I think my best experiences in traveling have always been when you know somebody on the inside who lives in the other city, who you can stay with or who can recommend for you what's changed that guidebooks don't necessarily reflect. And we publish online and through an e-zine a weekly culture guide that's free to subscribe to for the city. And what we're interested in is living culture, the new emerging pop-ups, exhibitions, information we'll find out through Facebook or Twitter. We might find it out 24 hours before it happens. So it's constantly evolving and changing. And out of that, what we decided to do was try and develop a walking tour, which was unique every single time. So we tear it up and start again every single time, but also to work with a specific time, a specific day, and see what's happening in the city of that very moment. So what we're doing is kind of mashing up, I guess, unique cultural experiences, but part of a living culture, which is very much what we're interested in. So that's pop-ups, collectives, ideas. We're looking to bring people in and gaining them access to places that aren't necessarily on a tourist map.
Right.
It could be, anything from we've taken people lawn bowling, we've taken them to sex shops. You know, it's pretty varied. One of the single tenets of it is nobody knows exactly where they're going. They're never told where they're going on the walk. So it's not one of those things where people have this itinerary and go like, oh, well, we should have been here. Why didn't we do this? So therefore, there is that heightened expectation, and they're informed about 24 hours beforehand where we'll meet. So it is that you're kind of entrusting us.
Wait, so if I call you up and I say, hey, I'm in the city and I'm here right when I know you're going to take some tour, because you only do a couple of walking tours a month or so, right?
Yeah.
So you say, okay, Kate, and the 3-5 people with you or whatever, we're going to meet wherever, down by the Liffey somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just show up,
mm-hmm.
and I have no, it could be anywhere.
No idea.
Wow.
So I think that, well, that's because we literally try and create them. It can be created hours beforehand. And what we're trying to do is look at the city on a particular day and see what's happening and how we can work around that.
Right.
So it could be, for example, the theatre festival's on at the moment. So what we'd be looking to do would be gain maybe access to a rehearsal or get a snippet or an insight into that festival. Hard working class here is a music festival is coming up soon, so we reflect what's happening in the city at that moment in time, and we try and meld that with some of the existing elements of the city. Wonderful places like the Waldorf Barber Shop, which is a replica of a 1940s barbershop, which is on Westmoreland Street, which is exactly as one would see in New York. So what we do is we work with some wonderful existing spaces, but also we work with a kind of the moment experience. Or it could be somebody talking about their fanciful idea to develop something down the line. So we're very much interested. It's a walk, but it's not historical. It's about living writers as opposed to dead writers. So, for example, there's a wonderful new writer, our emerging Irish talent, called Belinda McKeown, whose first novel, Solace, won a number of awards. She lives in New York at the moment, but on one of our walking tours, we had her do a reading in a DVD. I know it sounds quite old school these days, but a DVD store in town, because she set part of it in that store itself. And she was in college with me at the same time, so it was wonderful to have her read in an authentic experience or an authentic place, which is actually part of the novel itself. So that's what we strive to create.
Very cool. And this is a hard question because now you've done this probably for a while, but to you, what was the hands down your favorite? Because it's new for you too. You're trying to create it.
Well, I've done most of it myself. So a lot of it is out of my own lack of out of a desire to not be bored by what I'm doing. So I don't want to do the same walk every time. I don't want to meet the same people and tell the same story. I think a lot of tours tend to do that, and you can get that feel off of people.
Sure.
So ours has a degree of improvisation. Some things work, some things don't, but the experiences are more heightened. So when it does take off, it's wonderful. We had one amazing one, which ended up, it was around Merrion Square, and it was kind of around Stephen's Green, Merrion Square. We got a private guided tour of the Natural History Museum. We did a pop-up impromptu street feast, which is this idea which was developed here where you basically invite your neighbors to bring some food to the table, and you put it outdoors, and once a year you all basically have this communal experience, which is quite common on the continent, but possibly less so here. Mainly down to our weather being a little bit more inclement as opposed to, you know, in the piazzas of Italy or plazas or whatever else where people hang out a little bit more. Then we caught a band playing on the grandstand in Stephen's Green and ended up lawn bowling. So it was one of the kind of perfect, some of these things were happening, we just basically popped in on them, and some we made some work, we worked behind the scenes to create. So
yeah. It
was one of those kind of, I guess, the more interesting and varied it is, the more exciting it is for us.
We only have a couple minutes left. If you were selling Ireland to somebody, and you have told us these great things, being an Irishman, what's the best part of Ireland to you?
I think the best part of Ireland is its people. I think you know when you look at kind of. You can't export personality, you can't export character. Well, we have exported character wonderfully, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's the beauty of the country itself, but that has to be matched with this kind of sense of welcome. And I think Irish people are incredibly gregarious. They're entertaining, they're interesting, and also I think there's an element of being clued in, you know. I think they're pretty educated race, but also well-informed about world affairs. So I think it's the people. I think it's one of that kind of unique spirit, occasionally mixed with spirits. But I think it's that kind of sense of warmth and intrigue.
I love it. You were terrific.
Thank you very much.
Okay, somebody wants to go to the website. How do they get there?
It's dublin.lecool.com. LECOOL.com.
Michael, thank you.
My pleasure.
Hope to talk to you. Go on one of those tours. Can you imagine? I don't know. But if I have the right clothes, I have to go through my back and see. We'll be back with more. Hang with us. Dublin, Ireland. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado, and to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Making the right decisions is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or at worst, depression? Hi, Ted Anderson from Midas Resources. We all know when a company acts irresponsibly, divesting ourselves in a move towards safety is prudent. When the market becomes volatile, U.S. treasuries are a safe haven. But what do you do when the U.S. government overextends itself and spends beyond its means? Many investors are turning toward gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas Resources has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold, discussing costs, benefits, risks, featuring full-color illustrations, weights, and measures. The book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold may be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, the book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-597-8843. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843.
Her hair is hollow gold. Her lips sweet.
All right, once again, America Tonight, Kate Delaney. We are in Dublin, Ireland, giving you a little flavor of the city, talking about the gathering coming up next year, 2013. There's so much to see and do. We can't even do it in a week. I mean, it's like crazy. You have to come and live in a castle, I think, for a month. Somebody I know did that, and they said it was just amazing. Georgina Carraher is with us, and she brought all this equipment with her. You know, I'm looking at this Gaelic Games, and I'm thinking, is this hurling? Is this this has to be hurling. And yesterday was a huge day in Ireland. Americans, you can relate to this. You know how we do nail the score and we talk about American football is ginormous. That's a word. It's in the dictionary.
Ginormous.
It is. It's a word. So is hurling here. And you had your Irish championships yesterday. And what happened was Galway and Kilkenny had come to a draw. And then they came back for this one big
replay.
Yep. And in the replay, Kilkenny won. But you've got to explain this to me right off the bat. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Kate.
And I used to do sports. I used to travel around with the Cowboys. I have a sports book out, but I can tell you I'm going to have to write another one because hurling, I don't understand hurling. I know little bits and pieces about it, but I was reading the recap in the Irish Times, and I was trying to get a handle on the score, and the score is Galloway wins 3-22, 3-11. What does that mean?
Okay, because what happens in Gaelic games, and both hurling and Gaelic football have the same scoring system, we have like large goalposts up high, and if the ball goes between the posts, this is that's worth 1 point, and if it goes into the net area, that's a goal, and it's worth 3 points. So as you read the score there, it says 3-11, but that's three goals, that's worth 9 points, so it's 9 plus 11. So, and the other score is what,
22
yeah, for Kilkenny, who won. So they got three goals, which is 9 and 22 points, individual points.
Wow.
Like a really fantastic, amazing game and high-scoring game. So.
And people like high-scoring games, right?
Oh, yeah, but that's the nature of Gaelic games. We have two phenomenally successful games here. Gaelic football, mm-hmm. which is the most popular sport here in Ireland, and then hurling, which I suppose is our ancient sport. We have written references go back to hurling for over 3,000 years. So it's phenomenally old and ancient.
Ooh, 3,000. Mm-hmm. So Gaelic football. Yes. Explain Gaelic football.
Okay, so Gaelic football is the most popular sport. It will be played right across the country, ladies and gents. And the biggest rising sport here in Ireland.
Ladies play ladies it? Is it like football. Power... What do we call it in the United States? Powder puff football? Or what? I don't know what it is.
They're not powder puff girls, I can tell you that.
No, Irish women are not like
no,
that. So,
not.
Yeah.
So that's the most popular sport. And it would be played... They're both played on the same pitch. Mm-hmm. Much bigger than, say, a traditional soccer pitch. About 50% bigger. Each team will have 15 players. And again, they'll score by between the posts or in the net area. But there's a huge amount of movement on the ball, and the ball is played in the air a lot. So you can catch the ball in your arm, you can run with it for 4 steps, but then you must either bounce it once and then what we call solo it, which is kick it back up to yourself and run the length of the pitch, or hand pass it, or kick pass it. And you can score from very far out in the field. It's very exciting. There is never a nil all draw in Gaelic football or hurling. It just doesn't happen because the players are so skillful and they can score from so far out the field that there will always be points scored.
And the Gaelic football, is it played, what are the facilities like?
Oh, fantastic. Again, I suppose culturally here in Ireland, what we've tried to do is keep the games completely alive and relevant to people here. And the Gaelic Athletic Association, or the GAA, G-A-A as it's called here, was set up to try and protect the games and put a formal structure around the games because we were losing our culture and our games. But what we have is over 2,000 clubs in the tiny little island of Ireland.
2,000
yeah.
clubs? Wow.
It's phenomenal. So it means every parish, every community has a club. And that is the heart of the community, to be honest. It's where people congregate for their sports primarily, but also for lots of other things. So, you know, Gaelic clubs operate at the level of your social interaction as well. So they're brilliant.
So in the United States, we have a thing called tailgating. Do you which means people bring their cars and they flip open their cars and open up barbecues and sit there and talk and then the game happens. Do you have something similar? That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, a little bit like that, except I have to say, in Ireland, the focus is the game. You know, you do come and the focus is watching and participating and taking part in the game and the culture of the game and getting involved, and then maybe afterwards you might retire to the local bar to discuss the game.
Discuss
that definitely happens. But it's very much community based because you see the nature of the games here is they're played right throughout the island. They get phenomenal attendance levels. I mean, the final yesterday in Croke Park had 82,500 people at it, but it's all amateur. So everything that happens around the sport, even those players who were playing yesterday regularly in front of crowds of 60, 70, 80,000, they don't get paid. It's about pride, passion, local community, county club, and being involved. And the ethos of the games is that you give back as well. So if you're involved in your local club, not just at a playing level, you're expected to give back in another way. You're expected to mentor, take part, and do other things around it.
So the women's is just as popular as
oh,
the
yeah, men? Absolutely. The biggest, as I said, rising sport is ladies' Gaelic football. And say the club I'm involved with, we would have over 100 teams, but we would have as many female teams in both Gaelic football and also the ladies' version of hurling is called camogie. And also in camogie. Now, there's no difference between hurling and camogie in the sense of being played. It's the same rules and everything. But, yeah, the girls play it, and it's called camogie.
Are the games played on Saturdays or weekends? And for how long is, like, a schedule? Does it vary?
It varies probably across county to county, but depending on what's going on. The official county seasons, where our championships and our league take place, are from February to September. So they're when all the county games are played. But clubs play right throughout the year, even in the inclement conditions that can sometimes take place in Ireland. We still would have clubs playing all through the year and training all the time and everything. Yeah. All the training tends to happen in the evening time. Because, again, it's all voluntary based.
Right.
And then a lot of matches at the weekend. Yeah.
pads? No pads?
No, none of that sissy stuff. no protection.
Did you hear that sissy stuff? No protection. Oh, my. So no helmets, nothing.
In hurling now, the regulations insist they must wear helmets. A lot of the county players grew up not wearing helmets, so they don't like it, but now they must, yeah.
So tell us about hurling, because as you said, this goes way back in your history.
Yeah.
And it is popular. I mean, I saw that from the amount of people that were flooding out of the stadium, and I heard all about it,
yeah.
How Kilkenny was the favorite, and, you know, I'm a person who roots for the underdog, although I will say I was, because of my roots, are Irish. Fitzgerald Delaney is my two names, so I heard about Kilkenny so much that I did pull for them,
think most people in Ireland yesterday are probably pulling for Galway.
Yes, that's what I think too.
Kilkenny are 34-time winners. They're the biggest number of winners of our All-Ireland Hurling Championships. They're a phenomenal hurling county, absolutely stunning and amazing. But, you know, hurling, yeah, goes right back in the annals of our history. All our mythological stories, all the warriors were hurlers. You'll always have it right through all our stories. But it's the fastest field sport in the world on grass. It's amazing. The ball is called a slither, and that slither can travel at up to 140 miles an hour in a match by the players. It's fast and furious and amazing skill. Absolutely.
Now, wonder why the helmet thing, 104, get beamed with that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Or get the stick, get the whack of a hurl. The stick is called a hurl. It's a long stick made from ash, always made from ash. It's beautiful, flexible wood. But, I mean, they break regularly as well. But
right.
It's so fast and furious, but brilliant to watch. Amazing skill.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so do you have sporting goods stores and people go and pick out their sticks?
Yeah, and I mean, all, you know, in schools, it's taught through schools and through clubs. So it's still very much part of our culture and everything we do on a day-to-day basis. The games are still hugely relevant, which is brilliant.
Right.
And I suppose that's what we're doing. We've set up this thing called Experience Gaelic Games, and we bring in visitors to play. So we have lots of Americans, actually, who come and try it out. It's brilliant.
Oh, we have to be terrible at it, aren't we?
Oh, no, you're actually really good.
I play tennis and golf. I don't know if that translates to hurling.
It's all hand-to-eye coordination, and we get lots of American groups, and they're enthralled. You see, they love the nature of the games because they're multidimensional. You don't just do one thing when you get the ball. You've loads of options, and you can hit it, or you can hand pass it, or, you know, there's lots of things that happen within a game. So they really love it, and we find they just embrace the whole culture of it as well.
I love that. You were a delight to have on the show. Thank you so much.
I have the whole.
I feel kind of wimpy. I thought I was a pretty good sportswoman, but now I'm feeling inferior.
I have a hurl here. I'll get her to hit.
Thank you so much.
Thank
terrific.
Brilliant.
We'll be back with more here from Dublin, Ireland. Hang with us.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free. Contains all natural and certified organic ingredients. Contains no preservatives or animal products. Supports a healthy digestive and immune system. Supports weight loss. Improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, TerraGanix.com, or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Prices are for base buildings only and may not be available in some areas. This is an alert. If your business or church is building next year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. Call General Steel now for the quality and the price in a pre-engineered steel building that you just can't beat. That's right. General Steel can save you thousands of dollars with a pre-engineered steel building designed for your business or church. What does this mean? How about a 50 by 100 foot building for under $30,000? Don't pay thousands more than you should without calling General Steel first. Call 866-99-STEEL today and save as much as half the cost and time of conventional construction. Don't let rising steel prices put your project in jeopardy. Call now to lock in your price for 3 months. Call 866-99-STEEL. That's 866-997-8335. Don't spend thousands of dollars more than you should. Call 866-99-STEEL today.
If you're considering a water filter, have you heard about AquaPail? AquaPail from FreezeDryGuy.com has huge advantages over many other water filters. American-made AquaPail units are designed and engineered to not just filter contaminated water, but capture or kill all bacteria and viruses to non-detectable levels. AquaPail has the fastest flow rate of any other water filter on the market, filtering a gallon of contaminated water in about 5 minutes. That's water when you need it. Now, get the world's fastest, safest, and most reliable gravity-fed portable water treatment system for surface, well, and wastewater sources. AquaPail. Available in 4 sizes starting at only $100. And all orders to the lower 48 ship free. Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. That's 866-404-3663 or freezedryguy.com. 100% veteran-owned. The Freeze Dry Guy.
Healthy soils grow healthy plants. So before you plant your survival garden this year, is your soil healthy? Maximize your crisis garden soil with EM1 from Terraganics. EM1 Organic Soil Conditioner, Fertilizer Amendment, and Compost Accelerant provides healthier gardens and faster, efficient garden composting. EM1 from Terraganics.com quickly improves soil structure by increasing nutrient availability and converting organic matter into soil humus. This improves seed germination and root growth, improves plant quality, size, color, flavor, nutrient value of fruits and vegetables, and improves shelf life. And when rain is not in the forecast, no worries. EM1 improves moisture retention in soils, helping reduce drought stress. Just like you prepare all else, prepare your crisis garden for maximum yields with EM1 from Terraganics.com. Order now at TerraGanics.com or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Terraganics. Life's getting better.
You tuned into America Tonight today because you know what? We're not talking about the boringness of who's going to win the election. Instead, we're talking about Ireland. How fun is that? I'm broadcasting live from Dublin, Ireland, and boy, we've met some really characters, really interesting people along the way. And sitting with me right now is Sheena Nikkon-Ali. I feel so proud of myself for pronouncing that correctly.
Okay.
You know, I'm a journalist, so here's what I learned. I went to journalism school, and they tell you, when in doubt, don't pronounce. I'm here with... and I used to do sports, so all the hockey players, I think, helped me a little bit along the way. Sheena, you're a delight. You just seem wide awake. Like, you know, we could be sitting at a pub together, and you're fresh. Like, I have a face full of tired. You have a face full of energy.
I'd like to think that I'm not. I'm more of a late night person. I can kind of stay up all night and then ask me to come in at 6 o'clock. I just won't go to sleep. So waking up this morning was fun. But yeah, I've had some water. I've had some coffee. I'm ready to rock and roll.
I like that. Water and coffee. All right. So you're with the Gaelic League is what we're going to call it. There's a different name and I'm going to have you pronounce that. I'm not even attempting it. And we're going to talk about language. So tell me Gaelic League is really?
It's Conra na Gaeilge. To be fair, to get your mouth around that, if you haven't been practicing for about 3 days,
say that again.
Conra na Gaeilge.
Conra na Gaeilge.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel good. I feel like I did that okay.
I was going to say you did great because Gaeilge obviously means Irish. That means the Irish language.
Right. So How did you, well, first of all, how did you get interested in this?
Surprisingly, it was kind of by accident. My mom and my family, they're not native Irish speakers, but I went to an Irish-speaking primary school. My best friend was going, it was a good school, kind of popped me in. By the time we were moving up to Dublin then, it was kind of a Gael school, that's what they're called, Irish medium education schools. It was a Gael school, it was no school. I loved the language and went on then to study it at second level as well, and even in college too. So I feel it's a funny thing when it's not your mother tongue, but you feel like it should be. It's kind of, there's some things you just can't say in English, and I still say my prayers in Irish and, you know, stuff like that. So it's kind of ingrained in me from just, I would have friends that I only speak Irish with, and all through work it's all Osh Gaeilge or all through Irish. So it's great.
Do a lot of people speak Irish?
Yes and no, I suppose. A lot of people would say that they would have knowledge of it because they would have learned a bit of it at school, but I suppose there's been a great growth in the Irish medium education sector, so that has helped things enormously, because it takes out, I think there's some prejudice against it, which isn't surprising, the history of the language, but where people, you know, it's been, maybe they feel like it's been forced on them, or if they've had to learn it through school, it's very much seen as a classroom subject, and you can't speak it if you don't have your grammar all correct. So I think that has done a lot of damage in some ways to the language, whereas when you go to an Irish-speaking school, you learn how to play in Irish. It's not you've no hang-ups about it, and it's just something that you have. So it's great to be bilingual, and I think there would be a lot of people, there's more and more people in Ireland that would have a better sense of bilingualism, and kind of, you'll see it on signs and stuff.
Somebody told me yesterday, and I was in Belfast, and I was confused by this, that there's a slight difference between Irish and Gaelic.
Yes.
So now there's two different languages.
There's an awful lot. I suppose there's the Irish language, and I think a lot of people, when they're trying to speak about Irish, they call it Gaelic because it's just to differentiate it from, you know, speaking, we'll say, English with an Irish accent.
Right.
Which would be known as kind of Hiberno-English. I suppose it's a mismatch of the two. But with Gaelic, normally from when I would talk about Gaelic, I'd be talking about Scots Gaelic. So it's the language that they would speak in Scotland that's quite similar in a lot of ways to Irish because they come from the same kind of family of languages. But it is different. Gaelic would be something that little bit different, whereas the Irish language is something quite unique to Ireland.
And so if we go back in the history of the Irish language, how did that develop? Where did that start? The origin?
The origin. Oh, wow. My history. I should have brushed up on this before.
There's no quiz at the end.
That's all right. I suppose there's different Celtic languages, and some of them would be very similar, such as, we'll say, Irish and Scots Gaelic. And then you've also got Welsh, for example, would be similar in that it's a Celtic language, but it's very different. I wouldn't understand what a Welsh speaker was saying if they were speaking Welsh to me, whereas I would probably be able to understand a Scots Gaelic speaker. So that it kind of just divided, I can't say how many thousands of years ago, but I know for example, we'll say Irish is one of the three oldest written languages in Europe, you know, outside of Latin and Greek. So it goes back quite a good bit. So you're talking before then, it would have kind of diverged into Scots Gaelic and Irish and Welsh, and also the language they speak in Breton, the Breton language,
mm-hmm.
And Cornish and Manx, which I think they're almost extinct now. So it has quite a varied family tree, if you will, but as I said, kind of the Scots Gaelic and the Irish would be the two of the most similar for understanding.
Purposes. What are the vowels? What would be the vowels?
The vowels. I just said the vowels for a second. I was like, the vowels in Irish? Oh, Lord. No, the vowels would be quite similar. It's A-E-O-I-U. Yes.
So similar.
On. Yes, except that we have something in Irish that I'm sure confounded you in my name as well. It's something called a father. And it means, it's funny, it's a Sheena father, which means an extension. It means it elongates the sound. So you've got, instead of just an E or an I or a U, you've got a kind of a longer sound coming out of it. So I'm trying to think of an example. Let's say the name Sean, for example.
Sean.
That would have an accent or a father on the A instead of Shan. It's just spelled exactly the same way and means old, but it has no accent. So it's Shan or it's Sean. That's
Sean. I've heard that before. Yeah, different variation.
Yes.
So in talking about the language and learning the language, mm-hmm. if somebody comes in fresh, you know, because now it's like Rosetta Stone and I want to learn how to speak Swedish yeah. and Italian. And, you know, that's a big American thing that we all think that we're going to conquer the languages. So yeah. I know there's no Rosetta Stone for Irish. Is it hard to learn? Is it different? Like, let's take an American, which is different from your upbringing. Like you yeah. said, you went to Irish school when you're there and you're immersed in it. You're not even worried about who thinks what about the language. You're a kid. You're having fun. You're learning it. But it's harder to learn languages when you're older anyway. So,
certainly.
So, what's the most difficult thing about learning it?
The most difficult thing is, I think if you've got the right attitude, first off, you're fine. That seems to be the hang up with some people, that they feel, oh, they can't make a mistake. Don't worry about it. Everybody makes mistakes learning languages. But I suppose some people find the grammar, it's quite, in some ways it's similar to German. Some people find it quite complex. When they try to standardize the language, kind of to make it easier, I think that just confuses people more because you have more exceptions to rules that were there for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years.
Right.
To be fair, I think it's possibly the pronunciation. I mean, nothing sounds like it looks on paper, as you found out today. So I think if you learn the language by listening and by speaking it, that's probably your best. Immersion education is the best way to do it. But I think, for example, in America, Dalti na Gaeilge are fantastic. They organize immersion weekends everywhere from San Francisco to Minnesota to New York. So there are supports there, definitely. We actually have a teacher teaching. Our official title is the Democratic Forum for the Irish Speaking Community in Ireland and abroad. So that's what Conor na Gaeilge does. But we also do run night classes as part of that we have done since our foundation got 120 years ago. But we have one of our teachers in our Dublin office at the moment, and she's an American, born and bred, and she started learning Irish in America and loved it so much and just got into it so much that she's come over, and her Irish is so good that she now is teaching classes.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's got a very different perspective. She's obviously got the complete beginner perspective,
right.
which is fantastic.
Which is good.
Great. Yeah.
To help the people. So tell us some words. How do you say hello?
Oh, the reason this is difficult is because...
there is no hello.
No, well, there is and there isn't. Basically, how to explain it. It literally means God be with you. That's how you say hello in
Okay,
Irish.
So God be with you.
And there's a lot of guttural sounds, but bear with me on this one, okay? We'll get you saying it. There will be a quiz afterwards. Diaguit. Diaguit, that's for one person. And if you're speaking to two people or more, it's Diaiv.
Diaiv.
Very good.
Diaiv.
Yeah, you've got
Diaguit.
It.
Diaguit.
Yeah.
I like that. So, I'm okay on the languages. Maybe yeah. I could learn this. It would take me a while. I used to speak Spanish. I think you're right. The thing that you said is the key is being open to it and not worrying about making a mistake, because people are afraid to speak. They're afraid they're going to make a mistake.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do a fun one. Let's go to the bar.
Okay. Rockamid Quiganmar.
Rockamid Quiganmar.
Very good.
Rockamid Quiganmar.
Yeah, and a nice easy one as well is if you're trying to say cheers in Irish, it's slánta.
Slánta.
Yeah. And
I've seen that. That's
you've probably seen that. Yeah.
Slánta, yeah.
And that means health. So you're basically you're toasting your good health.
Is there like an Irish dictionary?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. And there's not only that, there's amazing resources online for people. So if you were looking to learn Irish.
How can they do that?
I'll give you one that I use for it. Now, this is kind of a terminology thing, but it's fuckle.ie. And that sounds, it's not a bad word, I promise.
Okay.
If it's spelled in Irish, it makes it all fine. It's FOCAL, and that means word.
Uh-huh.
So FOCAL.ie. And then there's also TEG.ie. They have resources for all the different levels of learning languages, which we would use in our courses. And they have everything from podcasts to scripts. And it's fantastic. They do great work. So,
Sheena is Irish, not Gaelic?
Yes, it's Irish, yeah.
And I said my middle name, for people know I've been saying this, Sheena is Gaelic.
Yes. Yeah,
isn't that interesting?
Exactly. And they come from the same root. They actually come from the French Jean, which means, I believe, grace of God. So we're very fancy.
Yeah, that's similar, because angel. People say that the direct translation for my middle name, and that's why I say, why didn't my family just go with that? Sheena, angel is absolutely how I describe myself.
She's got a little halo here. You listeners can't see it.
Sheena, you are marvelous. It was fabulous meeting you.
Thank you.
How do you say thank you?
Gurav Mahagat.
Gaurav Malgad.
Literally means may you have goodness. So Gaurav Malgad.
Oh, Gaurav Malgad. I like that. Yeah. I got to remember some of this. You were wonderful. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you so much.
Thanks. I hope you all learned. There's a quiz next week. If you can remember three of the words you told me, I'll give you a copy of my book, Level the Playing Field. You can do it next week. Quiz, I promise you. We'll be back with more.
My name is Gary Johnson. Today I reach out to you, members of all political parties, including the disaffected and disillusioned among the Republicans and Democrats. Today there's a handful of people in Washington ruining America for 330 million of us. They've kept our nation in a state of perpetual war and increasing unsustainable debt. This small group has presided over the elimination of our Bill of Rights and the systematic dismantling of our freedoms guaranteed us under our Constitution. We the people will never agree on the small things, but let's agree on the big thing. Our leaders have blown it. America is better and brighter than this. Be libertarian with me this one time, and I'll prove it to you. Live free.
Gary Johnson, Libertarian for President.
Paid for by Gary Johnson, 2012.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, thanks to Dan Pilla, you can get the tax help you need to end your tax nightmare.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce or eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. With the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Since 1974, Evelyn Gibson has helped thousands of people live healthier, happier, and more productive lives. GibsonsHealth.com demonstrates, educates, and inspires customers to replace their healthy erosive lifestyles with a health-enhancing one. Now, GibsonsHealth.com is pleased to offer AIM Ready Beet's Pure Juice Powder. Beet juice has long been known as a blood purifier and builder of red blood cells. The American Heart Association says one in three adults has high blood pressure and hypertension. Researchers found that a daily glass of beet juice beats high blood pressure. And not only that, just a teaspoon or two a day of Ready Beets powder increased stamina by 16%. Certainly, drinking beet juice daily is a better solution than most meds with their side effects. Order your fresh, convenient form juice powder of this amazing vegetable called Ready Beets from GibsonsHealth.com. To buy at wholesale prices, call 800-388-6844 or go to GibsonsHealth.com. Gibson's Healthful Living. Since 1974, over 30,000 healthier customers.
All right, so I just decided, as we're broadcasting from Dublin, Ireland, that I'm going to learn how to speak Irish. And I'm sick of the Philadelphia Eagles, so my new team is Kilkenny. And they, of course, were the winners. I like the front runner sometimes, so I'm going to go with Kilkenny.
Absolutely.
I'm burning my Eagles shirts, and I'm going to get a Kilkenny jersey. So that's what I'm going to wear around the house. We are so thrilled to be here, and I talked about this before. The Clontarf Hotel is just amazing, and it's part of that whole history thing that I like. I love history, and we're really sitting in history. We have Stephanie Hayes with us, and she can probably fill in the blanks much better than I could. I was all over Wikipedia and doing all this stuff, trying to figure out. And in my mind, I mean, this sounds funny, but I said this earlier, I have this picture about Brian Boru, the High King, and the fact that he was killed after battle in his tent. In my mind, I have have this, I'm not even looking up a picture of him because I have this vision of what I think he is, and I just think of my own Irish roots that he was probably talking and bragging about winning, and then he decided to chillax, as we say in America, in the tent, and then boom, they get him in the tent, the Vikings, those darn Vikings.
I should probably break it to you, he was actually 72 years of age, so if you had maybe in your mind this very beautiful flowing haired, good looking guy, I'd park it. Unfortunately.
Okay. All right. So he wasn't some hot young guy.
He was a mere 72 years of age when they got him.
Oh, that's indeed.
But I'm sure in his day he was a fine bit of homework, as we'd say here.
I like that. A fine bit of homework. I like that. Stephanie, it's a delight to have you on because you can give this sense of some history to the people that are listening to us, not just in America because we have an international audience too, but the hotel itself, how did that all develop around Clontarf Castle?
Well, you have hit the nail on the head in the sense that the site that the castle was built on was famous for the Battle of Clontarf, where Brian Boru was unfortunately, as you know, killed on that night. He, however, did win the battle. The Vikings at the time, there was the King of Leinster, Maile Morda, and also King Sitrick, the Viking King of Dublin, brought over Vikings from Orkney Islands, Isle of Man, and a battle ensued. Brian Boru was victorious. And where he was killed was actually on this site. So very, very close to here. The original castle was built in 1172 by Hugh de Lacy. It was actually built as part of a circle of defence defending Dublin City. It was a couple of castles built at the time, Artane Castle, which is no longer, to defend the city of Dublin, you know. So I suppose it was home to a number of people. King George, for example, would have lived here in the 1600s, and it eventually fell to a family in about the mid-1640s called the Vernon family, who would have virtually owned most of Clontarf. We still have Vernon Avenue, Vernon Grove, everything around here is called after the Vernons, and their family line would have owned it for about 300 years. When the male line failed, as unfortunately it tends to do, it was gifted by one of the Vernon nieces to the Ulton family, who again lived in it for a number of years. But in the 1800s, 1835, an architect, William Vitruvius Morrison, was brought into the hotel, into the castle at the time, and it was deemed that it was unsafe. So the castle was actually demolished. The only original bit, actually, as you see in our main lobby, part of the original wall still stands. But they rebuilt the castle in 1837, so the lovely exterior that you see now, it's about 175, 176 years of age.
Wow. The if people are listening, and especially in the States, the idea of what a castle is, like we watched The Tudors, and they're so opulent and crazy. And I lived in Spain for a while, and I saw Isabella and Ferdinand's castle.
Lovely.
And that was, amazing. It was so cavernous and huge. Yeah. And all I kept thinking is they definitely didn't have Burger Kings because their beds were so tiny, mice could sleep in them. But what would to give a description, what would a typical castle, it's not what we think, originally castles weren't opulent, really, were they?
They weren't. They were built as primary residences for the families. Now, the families at the time were all, our definition of royalty, they were all kings, but they would have had maybe 12 odd rooms upstairs, a very large kind of banqueting hall, and some smaller downstairs rooms. In some instances, they would have had servants' quarters as well. But they weren't, I suppose we all picture the old rambling castles with 400 odd rooms, etc. That wasn't really how it was. While they would have been large, they weren't ostentatious or ridiculous. In fact, the decor in them would have been quite minimal.
But would you have had, like in the hotel now, and people are posing for pictures, I notice this all the time, near the armor, the knights. Would you have had knights?
Yeah, there would have been the Templar Knights. The restaurant here was called Templars after the original Templar Knights, which would have been, again, from this part of the city.
So we had knights, we certainly did, and we still have them, in addition to five lions guarding the castle as it currently stands.
Wow, and thinking about castles and the Irish, and you said defending Dublin,
yeah.
Was it the Vikings were the feared, killers that were coming after the Irish? Or?
They were. It was probably one of the only times we actually were victorious over the Vikings, but I suppose everybody again would envision that these Vikings would have come from Scandinavia. They were actually a little bit closer to home. They were from Orkney Islands and the Isle of Man, so just over in the UK. They didn't have that far to travel at all, but I'm sure their ancestry would have gone back to the Normans and
sure.
On a little further afield.
Yeah. And would it be, and I'm also picturing this, and for people listening, same thing, what you think a battle is, would there have been thousands of Vikings?
There would have been thousands of Vikings. There certainly were. I don't know the actual numbers for that battle, but it definitely would have been in the region of 3,000 to 4,000.
Wow.
We will have a very important date in history coming up in 2014, when it will be the centenary of the Battle of Clontarf, so there are plans afield.
Will they reenact it?
That is the hope. That is the hope. It's something that we are hoping will be on the tourism agenda, obviously, for 2014, and there will be a battle reenactment. I understand, in the tentative plans, that it will take place in St. Anne's Park, which is a beautiful greenbelt park here, about 50, 60 acres,
mm-hmm.
And will also incorporate the coast. We're a 5-minute walk from the coast here as well, so there will be a reenactment.
Brian Boru, the High King, was he, from what you know in history, because people talk about him all the time in Dublin, he a popular king?
He would have been very, very popular at the time. He certainly would, in so much as any ruler was, but he was always deemed to be one of those very fair characters and would have had a massive following and a massive fan base. So that date when, unfortunately, he was struck down on the night of his own battle, as he said, a couple of prayers of thanks, I'm sure, for winning, there was a huge outpouring of grief after us. There was, yeah.
What do you think it is about this hotel? I mean, it's a hotel and you do the things that hotels
do.
But people come here from the community, though.
They do.
So it's not some tourist hotel. Yes, you take business people and whatever.
Yeah.
So people like the lore of this, don't they? They like that wall. They like the nooks and crannies.
They absolutely do. I suppose we're fortunate in the sense that, yes, it is a hotel with all of the facilities, the conference rooms, the bedrooms, the bars, etc. But it also has a heart, it has a history, it has a fabulous facade, and it is very much, we are in a residential area, so there is a huge sense of community here. We always, so you can be baptised, have your communion, you can get married here, have birthday parties, have your funeral here. So it is very much that kind of family gathering. Some of them are slightly more happy than others, but we will take care of them all, and we do it well. But also from an overseas visitor perspective, if they go into the bar here for a pint, they're not just mingling with tourists, and anybody will say that it is the interaction with Irish people that makes their holiday. And here you'll chat with the locals in the bar over a pint of Guinness.
And we found that it's just absolutely lovely, and the food is terrific. And wow, you were a delight, Stephanie. Thanks so much for coming on America tonight.
Thank you so much, and lovely to have you with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate everything the staff has done for us. They've just been wonderful. Hey, any thoughts on the show and my trip to Ireland? Any questions? You can send them to me at americatonight.net. Click on contact and bada bing, you are in. Thanks to so many people who made this show possible. The Irish Tourism Board, the fine people at Clontarf as well. They're wonderful. Victoria, great job. And of course, my Swedish friend, Lavisa, who was there through thick and thin. I think she got 2 hours sleep, maybe three, I don't know, tops, but it's worth it. Ciao, everyone.
Here it is, another election year. And here you are again, wishing you knew more about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the other amendments, and the Declaration of Independence. But who has the time to study? Wouldn't it be nice if you could simply listen to them? And wouldn't it be great if they came packaged with an index? Yep, an index that lets you go to any part of the founding documents just by punching in a track number on your computer or CD player. What exactly is the Ninth Amendment? Track 10, play. It's that simple. The Founding Documents Collection on audio CD. To get yours now, just go to Amazon.com and type in Founding Documents Collection CD. For just $19.95 and $3.99 shipping and handling, you'll have the firepower you need to argue from the ultimate facts that form our nation's foundation. Want to be a hero? Get one for you and give another to your local school for Constitution Day. Go to Amazon.com now and type in Founding Documents Collection CD.